Accession number 18822, Real 10.
George Aitchison, Real 10.
Johnny's idea of humour was somebody else in pain. I remember at a football match, the Shanghai club were playing Lohua, one of the better Chinese teams, and a British player fell and broke his shoulder bone. And as he lay there kicking in agony, the Chinese crowd loved it. They roared with laughter. See somebody lying on the ground with a broken collarbone, kicking away in agony. And there was a story brought back by one of my most sophisticated school friends, British. Every now and again, when there was a death penalty, the Chinese would be executed in what we called Nangtao, which is Chinese town. That was the old settlement before Shanghai was built. It was between the French concession and the international settlement. And for certain capital cases, a British police officer had to attend and certify that execution had been carried out. And he was in a very strong position because, as a great favour, he could ask people to come and watch, because the Chinese executions were nearly always garrotting. And the story I got back, some lucky friend of mine managed to see it, was that most of the people being garrotted had just enough money to bribe the chap to get over fairly quickly, 2 or 3 minutes. But there was one 15-year-old girl or thereabouts who hadn't a copper, and with no bribe, he was able to spin the whole thing out for a quarter of an hour, choking her into loss of consciousness and then getting back quite skillfully. And of course, the whole time her body was writhing, and the Chinese crowd loved it. They roared with laughter at every squirm and writhing. And so that was another good reason. The second reason, for there were 9 reasons altogether for my mother to feel that the Chinese were not quite the right thing.
How do you know there were 9 reasons?
Well, I can tell you. The third reason was theft. The Chinese, with a possible exception of the Patons, were the most skillful thieves in the world. And you could see that every single wall, wherever you looked, was covered with shards of broken glass set into concrete facing upright. That was wherever you went in Shanghai, every wall was covered like that. Otherwise, a Chinese thief would be able to worm his way over in the dark and get inside your... So, there you are. The Chinese are thieves, dirty, and an appalling and un-British sense of humour, for a start. And then there were beggars. Everywhere you went, there were beggars flaunting their diseased bodies and legs, and begging for... And at the turn of the screw, little boys came up and said, "Look, see, car, mister," meaning, "if you don't give me a few coppers, you'll find your paintwork scratched from end to end when you come out of the cinema or wherever you've been." And fifthly, the Chinese were all liars. And I could see that the Chinese thought the truth was a very valuable commodity, and the last thing you wanted to do was speak the truth about anything. You wanted to wait until a situation arose where somebody would have to give you a little bribe to say what really happened. And therefore you kept everything yourself, just on the off chance that you might get something your way. And sixthly, the Chinese were corrupt. And indeed, it was automatic. There was a Chinese word called kumshaw, which meant that for anything one did, if you recommended a man for a job or a possible business transaction, there was some cumshaw came your way in the way of hard cash. And superstitious, there was a pair of bronze lions outside the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, quite large, larger than life size. And those lions had, which were started out painted black, had all the paint rubbed off and the bronze showing, because Chinese would touch the lions, believing it would bring them luck. So they were, as well as every other fault, they were superstitious to boot. And the Chinese were noisy. To the Chinese, noise meant there was companionship, and you weren't about to be attacked, or because you had the luxury of making as much noise as you like, shouting and laughing and telling stories in a loud voice, or firing crackers, or being sociable and cheerful. That was fine, but to the British, one of the things they really pushed across any potential servant who was being hired was no noise. And for those reasons, the Chinese, who were in many ways the most estimable, hard-working and talented race in the whole world, were regarded by all Brits as, because different, therefore inferior. In late July 1937, the Japs came down in force from Manchuria and augmented their garrison in Hongkou District, that's the northeast suburb of Shanghai, and then attacked the Chinese 19th Route Army at Chape in North Shanghai. I better explain that outside the international settlement, there grew up a lot of housing facilities, some factories, from Chinese who could use Shanghai as an import-export safe area for their goods and money, but live just outside the international settlement, where land was cheaper and was a bit of bribery. You could get away with paying less rates for your property. And into the north of Shanghai, carrying straight on so that quite often you could scarcely realize you'd briefly crossed the international settlement. That area, there was no particular trouble on the north side of Shanghai. There was the main railway station called Chape Station, and in happier times, you could get on Chape and go all the way up to Peking by rail. But, of course, all that had been smashed up by various Chinese warlords and a general breakdown of law and order. And for reasons I'm not entirely clear, the Japanese decided to attack North Shanghai, keeping outside the international settlement at every point, and attack and capture the railway station. And we didn't quite know what excuse they had. I don't think they had any excuse at all, or what they proposed to do when they did capture Chape railway station. And my parents were on holiday in Japan at Kobe, but on hearing that hostilities were about to break out, my father caught the first boat back from Nagasaki to Shanghai. It was a very fast 24-hour service, considering it must be 400 miles, I think, with sometimes difficult weather. That 24-hour service was very good indeed. You could get aboard either at Nagasaki or at on the Shanghai Bund at 12 noon and be at the other end, Nagasaki, Shanghai and Nagasaki, in 24 hours exactly. We all thought that the Japanese were cute because every time the ship left Shanghai, all the wives and children and relatives would come and throw paper streamers from the shore to the ship, and there was a kind of competition to see whose paper streamer would last longest as the ship moved out up the Huangpu River towards Nagasaki. And the men all wear British European style suits, but for some extraordinary reason elastic sided boots, and the women always wore traditional kimonos, Japanese style, and the boys always wore European style shorts and jacket with a briefcase strapped to their back flat across, whereas the Japanese girls all wear kimonos in European style. And the general feeling was that since the Japs helped to keep the Chinese under control, and they had these quaint little customs, and holidays there were cheaper and better quality and much better hygiene than any holiday in mainland China, we drifted into always going to Japan for our holidays. And so there was a general feeling of reasonable goodwill for the Japs. I don't know whether anybody more intelligent thought there was something odd about the use of Japan was not at that time a rich country, but to use a standing army, very strong, shipping ammunition equipment, sending troops to attack North Shanghai, the more intelligent European might have wondered, what is this for and why, but nobody did. And by the time my father got to Shanghai, his steward had produced his fireman's uniform, because if you were a Brit in Shanghai, you had to join something to do your bit. For a time, my father was in the mounted section of the Shanghai Volunteer Corps, but this cost money because of the upkeep of the animal and the groom's wages, and there were mess bills and so on from various dinners. So my mother persuaded him, in fact told him, that if we were to save money to send both children to Oxbridge, he had better transfer to the fire brigade, where there are no horses to maintain. You're doing just as useful a job, because fire in a city like Shanghai is a very serious matter. You know, it could spread very fast. And you're doing a good job, and it didn't cost you any money to maintain a horse or have any of these boring volunteer corps dinners that cost a mess bill. So my father had done that, done his basic training as a fireman, and was posted to Hongkou, which was really almost a dangerous posting. He could do two things. The Japanese were not going to put one foot on international settlement soil. They would steer clear of that, so that nobody could say they had violated in any way the international settlement territory. So they disembarked downstream in the Huangpu River and came to a suburb called Yangtzepu, which had a decent road leading dead straight, almost east to west, to the bottom end of North Shanghai. And my father was in a lucky position. He, as headmaster of the Nichikuei school, this school was one football pitch away from the road that the Japanese mostly marines used, and His office was on the first floor, so he had a grandstand view of what the Japs did. And everybody thought the Japs would disperse fairly quickly of the 19th Route Army, who were, hadn't got enough arms, ammunition, organisation, or bravery to cope. But no, to everybody's astonishment, the 19th Route Army dug in, keeping the railway station at their rear, and they defended themselves. They dug good slit trenches, being 2 or 3 miles inland from the Whampoa River. They could do that without hitting the water level. And then they put up a barricade about 5 feet high of stout bamboos with little spaces for weapons to poke through and fire, and then they sharpened thinner bamboos into what were called punjis and shoved them outside that bamboo fencing, and to everybody's astonishment they held out for weeks and weeks. It's embarrassment to me to admit that some Brits, a party of half dozen, actually drove down to North Shanghai, level with Chape, and looked across the road and actually cheered on the Japanese while a couple of Chinese servants supplied them, you know, they'd got them thermos flasks with drinks and so on. So they were drinking away and actually cheered on the Japanese against the Chinese 19th Route Army. I think they didn't try that more than once or twice because the war got more dangerous. But my father said that he had 2 vantage points during this war. He was a fireman in charge of one appliance, and or a leading fireman or something, in charge of one appliance, and they could dash about anywhere without the Japanese actually stopping them. And secondly, in his off duty, it wasn't far for him to use the Shanghai International Road System to get to his school, go up to his office, and have a grandstand view of what was happening. He put up a camp bed in the office, and it saved him travelling the whole length of Shanghai to get back to his house. Some evenings he would just spend the night there when he was off duty. And he said that Japanese Marines surprised him by not being terribly clever. They seemed to be confusion about the stuff that they were had to carry up to this battlefront. But they seemed to do all right, but for some reason they stayed on an infantry role fighting, and nobody knows quite how. But the Chinese dug in for nearly 100 days, which is unbelievable. When you think that the Jap army, at its best, could conquer the whole of Burma, larger than France, in 130 days, and they could dispose of MacArthur and most of the Philippines in about the same amount of time, how was it that a Chinese unit, generally written off as underarmed, undertrained, and certainly staff full of soldiers who, if they felt, you know, the end was coming, would just throw away their uniforms and run. But they withstood the Japs for nearly 100 days, and nobody has. Let's see. The only person I know who was an observer there, and he never wrote a line about it before he died, was that Chindit chap,
Wingate?
No. Calvert.
Mike Calvert.
Yes. He, for some extraordinary reason, was an observer. And I think there are one or two British consular or Foreign Office officials who also observed, but I've never seen anything they saw written about it. And I still can't understand how, even though the Japs respected the international settlement to the point where they could have done a left hook into international territory and come behind the Japs, they didn't do it. They obeyed the line. And I don't know about the far end, because that was out of my father's sight. But somehow, they held the Japs up for three whole months and a little over. And you would have thought that bamboo defences could have been just anything, a light field gun or an 88mm mortar or a battery of it. But anyway, believe it or not, it lasted a long time. And meanwhile, my father found that Japanese true colours were showing through under the veneer. For a start, the bit of North Shanghai they had taken, they methodically looted everything. Early every morning, a street would be surrounded. And on a given a whistle, usually, the Japs would come in, smash down the doors, and take everything, loot everything. And what they couldn't take, they vandalized. And since it was outside the international settlement, well, people thought, well, you know, nothing we can do about it. And then their behavior was, on a smaller scale, as bad as at Nanking, in beating up, killing, raping, and so on, the unfortunate Chinese who hadn't managed to get away. And sadly, there was an incident where, having looted a Chinese property, they then set fire to it. They then called out the fire brigade, that's my father's unit, to put the fire out because it was threatening an adjacent Japanese property. So you could loot, vandalize, and burn, but if there was the slightest danger to any Japanese property, they called out the Municipal Fire Brigade. And I'm glad to say who was in charge refused point blank to oblige them. But eventually things got back to normal, but somewhere towards the end, Japanese frustration was such that they looted, and the whole of my father's school, the Nichikui Secondary School for Chinese Boys, and his office, smashing it. They even smashed a rather nice ornate fountain pen set on his desk, and threw the ink onto the carpet, and you know, generally it made a mess. I'm not quite sure they had to enter international settlement territory, but by then there were no police or armed forces in that part of Yangtze, extreme eastern end of Shanghai. And the things more or less settled back to normal after that, although nobody seemed to realise that the Japs were going to be the biggest threat to the British. The next year, at the end of July, I travelled by Trans-Siberian Express from St Albans to Shanghai, starting prosaically to Liverpool Street, and then Hook of Holland, Harwich Hook of Holland, and at the first main frontier, Bentheim, between Holland and Germany, there were swastikas. As soon as you crossed the border, there were swastikas everywhere, so that you even looked instinctively to see swastikas on the pats of butter on the breakfast table. But But although there were swastikas everywhere, the Germans were determined to be vastly civil. I'd made some error about declaring the amount of money I had. We always took American dollars. English pounds was just as safe and just as valuable, but the American dollar was one quarter the value of a pound, so you could make small transactions without lots of fiddly change or arguments and so on. And I made a mistake about the value of the American dollars on some form or other. And the Germans were charming. An English-speaking German officer in full uniform, dressed to nines, covered in swastikas, assured me that it was due to an error in failing to understand a phrase in German on an official form, and that, I could go sounding on my way and finish my journey. He was absolutely charming.
Which year is this?
38. End of the summer term, 38. I was still, I'd just finished high school certificate, or A-level, as they call it now, and the next day I went down to Liverpool Street and on. And then the next shock was the German-Polish frontier at a place called Negerology. It was halfway between Berlin and Warsaw, roughly, and the train stopped. Everybody still on the train got out. All our documents were checked, rechecked, searched. And those of us who passed the test, I had written everywhere to visit my parents domiciled in Shanghai, and that seemed to get through. And those of us who were allowed through were all put into one railway carriage. And then I saw that one whole kilometre of earth from north to south had been scorched earth, absolutely dead flat. And
on the Polish or German side?
Both sides. It was I think it must have been, I couldn't say, I don't know where the actual frontier was, but there was the frontier town, and we pushed out a short while, no, I'm wrong. It was Polish, I've got it completely wrong, it was Polish-Russian. Sorry, there was not much happening between Poland and Germany. Negerology is, I think, a Polish town with an opposite number, a kilometre or so away, and there were the frontiers. And there was a complete area, not only scorched earth for a whole kilometre, but enormous barbed wire entanglements, 40 foot high, complete with every 500 metres, there was a platform raised on the word's gone from it. A raised platform nearly as high as the barbed wire with searchlights and a machine gun. And that one, you could see as far as you could to the north, dead flat kilometre, miles of high barbed wire, and a platform every 500 metres, as far as the eye could see, both north and south. And a Polish train driver drove us very slowly at walking speed, about 3 miles an hour, 500 metres to the middle of this scorched earth, got off and went back to Poland. And a Russian train driver got on at that point and drove us into the frontier town and customs area of Negerology. And there